I'm Bill Zortman, and welcome to It's Your Agribusiness, the South Dakota Farmers Union Show. Joining us in studio today, Wayne Soren, Vice President, South Dakota Farmers Union, Mr. Lake Preston himself, and Luke Rendell, the marketing, media, just plain special guy that's always talking to me, trying to make sure that I got the right people in the show. Did I do okay today,
Luke? You did great, Bill.
We got some great guests.
We certainly do.
And we have a guest entertainer a little later on.
Somewhat, yes.
A little Elvis.
Maybe.
Maybe. Well, I like that. I like that. But, you know, we got to get started. You guys got a fair coming up later this week. Sorry we had to move the show because we had a fair here that we had to be live at.
Sure.
But what is this fair in South Dakota we're supposed to go to?
Oh, it's the little thing called the South Dakota State Fair. Starting up here this Thursday, Farmers Union will have a presence there all week long. But our big day is Saturday, September 4th. So that's South Dakota Farmers Union Day at the fair. Big day. We do a lot of things. We honor our Rural Dakota Pride honorees. We're going to have a panel discussion with one of our next guests is going to be on there. And then we also do the Farm Safety Quiz Bowl. So, but probably the highlight of the day is the Farmers Share Luncheon. So what's really cool about that is it only costs a quarter. You get a $12 meal for 25 cents, and that represents the farmer's share that they receive for their products.
Well, I think that leads us into Mr. Ducheneau.
What
do you think? Because he's going to talk about food supply problems. And we don't want any food supply problems when lunch is a quarter, Zach. What do you think?
Well, thanks, folks, and it's good to be here. I couldn't agree more. I've been trotting that farmer's share of the dollar deal around for the last 12 to 13 years in my former employment, and it's still every bit as important now. We've got to make sure that we're taking all the steps we can to improve the farmer's share of that food dollar, because really it's going to be up to those farmers in the end of it all to bring the nutritional value to the consumers that we also desperately need.
Wayne, what does Zach do as FSA?
Well, we're trying to talk about food security, and I think during the pandemic we sure saw how things can break down in a relatively big hurry, and what happens when we do have a breakdown, That's part of that is concentration, and Farmers Union's been talking about concentration for a long, long time, and we've been very concerned about all that. And I think when you buy beef directly from a rancher or a farmer, you find out what real good beef is, and I think that's something that we as farmers should promote.
Now, he is the FSA administrator, is that correct?
I believe so, yes.
So, Zach, what's that mean?
Well, I get to be the leader of the Farm Service Agency. And really, you know, folks that are listening most likely know that Farm Service Agency is one of the highest touch points that we've got between our producers and the assistance and the initiatives of the federal government. We've got offices in nearly every county and highly qualified staff out there serving our producers, and I get to help provide them with the vision of the administration and hopefully lead us towards a place where all of our producers are doing a little better after we're done.
All right, no politics, but what is the vision of the administration?
Well, you know, we talked about the food supply chain, and it's really important, and Wayne mentioned pandemic and the impacts of it as though it was in the past tense. It's important to know that we're still in the middle of this and cases are on the rise. And that's really at the forefront of our mission to ensure the safety of our producers and our staff out there in the countryside. But specific to the food supply chain, it's important to note we can get by without lumber. We can get by without some of the other durable goods that we're starting to see in more demand and a lack of supply, but we can't get by without the food. And in many of our grocery stores during this pandemic, while we had producers not too far from where you're at today having to depopulate their hog herd for lack of processing facilities, we had grocery stores where I'm at here on the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation without any meat on the meat counter shelves. That's something that's critical that we address. And the pandemic has really helped expose the inherent fragility of our food system as it exists. So the administration has really taken the lead on implementing some practices or moving forward a policy agenda that will help with that. You know, we did $500 million in our Build Back Better campaign to help build that resilience. And now we just finished soliciting ideas from the countryside through an RFI that closed on the 30th on how to get that $500 million out the door in the most effective and timely manner. And we also announced $150 million to help those small and very small processors of meat and poultry with inspection readiness grants, and $100 million for overtime inspectors.
So, Zach, is some of that money also available for these small processors to expand and possibly get more cold storage? That seems to be one of the big issues that we have is these small processors, they'd like to expand, but they have no cold storage that they need for excess processing. So it's kind of a chicken and egg type thing, you know what I mean?
It is. The department has several different funding opportunities in the form of favorable terms and lending to help with that. We've got the farm storage facility loan for the producers to do their own storage. Typically, we only think of grain bins and silos when we think of that program, but you can do cold storage. You can do the truck that you're delivering your direct-to-consumer product. There's a lot of latitude in that farm storage facility loan program. Also in our sister agency, the Rural Development, we've got value-added producer grants. We've got rural business grants and loans. Heck, you can even get some of this type of financing from your rural electric cooperative through the Red Leg program at RD.
I think that's all really important. I know I just had a steer processed, and I had to find a spot way back in March, and it was the fifth one that I called. Three of them wouldn't even take my name because they were already booked into 2023. So I think there's a real need for that, and I think I think we can sure facilitate some of that in the rural areas, and I think that'll help consumers all the way around.
You bet. And I actually had a chance last weekend to go to the Black Hills Farmers Market with my daughter, who's got a direct consumer beef program here. And it was nice to see all of the interest in the folks walking through and really taking an interest in not only where their food comes from, but how it comes and who's bringing that to them. It was really a fun experience.
Zach, we appreciate your time this morning. Keep working, will you please?
Absolutely, sir.
All right, we go from Zach to Justin. You want to introduce Justin to our audience this morning?
Luke? Justin Tupper, he's the operator at St. Ange Livestock out there out West River, our friends out west. Also vice president of U.S. Cattlemen's Association. So Justin's been real critical in this beef crisis, trying to get some resolve and get some answers to what we need to do going forward. So with that, I'll just welcome you, Justin. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, let's not only talk to the cattlemen, but those people that are counting on the cattlemen. What is the crisis for those people that don't know?
Well, I think as this cattle market has evolved and grown over the last 20 years, it's not a problem that started yesterday. The big corporate packers and the big corporate feedlots have gained such a market share and such a market control over the amount of cattle, plus the percentage of cattle that they have to work with. And when they're buying 80 to 85% of them in four major packers that basically hold hands and work together, there just becomes no way for the individual and the small farmer feeder who doesn't have a direct contact or have a big AMA with a corporate packer to compete in the marketplace. And we've just seen that erode over time. And I think really the resolve of it or where we need to be shows up really in the last few weeks. These fat cattle should be selling for 130 to 140 easily with the way the boxes are moving. And that's been going on for a year and a half, and absolutely can't move the market because they have so much control over these corporate feedlots. They don't need to go out and participate in the marketplace. So they don't have to go out and give more or try to get some of these cattle because they've got enough of them tied up. So in a nutshell, that's kind of where we are with this problem. And again, it isn't something that happened over a day or two. It's been evolving, but it's really coming to head here in the pandemic.
So, Justin, I'm kind of skipping over some notes here, but that kind of segues really well into the 5014 coming from Senator Grassley in Iowa. Can you just kind of hit on that? You know, I know there's some that are just so strongly for the 5014, and then there's some that are maybe thinking, well, let's talk about this a little bit. Can you discuss that a little with us?
Absolutely. You know, at U.S. Cattlemen's, we were at the forefront of 5014 and then tickled with Senator Grassley for introducing it. And what it would do is that would make all the packers buy 50% of their cattle in the spot cash market and deliver within 14 days. And, you know, in theory, that's a great idea. I mean, if the only problem we have is their captive supply and we don't have big corporate feed yards that are tied to them, I think some of the problems we have that, one, the South doesn't really come anywhere near 50%, and the North already sells somewhere near 50% in the cash market. So that's one issue and has been of contention. Another issue is, I think, as we've looked at 5014 over time and understanding that the packers and the big corporate moguls didn't get to where they are from not being able to change and avert a little, we're very nervous that they'll just go to their big corporate feed yards if we would get it and say, well, okay, now we're just buying 50% of these in the spot cash market. We're going to cover our numbers that way and maybe not get as much change as we'd like to see. Still a great idea. I think we have to get a referee in the game that regulates and keeps them from having so much market share and market control that they can do whatever they want with these cattle markets.
Yeah. So this is Wayne Sorn, Justin. So let's see, we got four, so that really doesn't make a monopoly. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, it's crazy to think that anybody who believes that they operate independently, those big four at 80, 85%, you just have to look at what little cash market we do have, and there's bids for an hour, one day a week usually, and it's funny, they're always the exact same price. So, you know, yeah, sarcasm totally intended, but they are definitely working together.
It was kind of interesting to me that when JBS had their huge cyber attack, nothing really happened to the cattle market.
And again, I think it just shows how much market power they have. You know, and everybody worries about capitalism, and yes, that this evolved over time, and there is some precedent in the market. I mean, the big packers were broke up once before. Ma Bell was broke up for way less monopoly and market share than we talk about here. So there's some precedent there to either get some very stringent regulations, which I think we're all skeptical of, that they won't find ways around because of you just follow the money, versus getting them broke up into pieces that they can't control so much of the market.
So, Justin, you know, about a month ago, you were in D.C. giving testimony in front of Congress. You know, I was able to watch that, and I thought you did a terrific job. But do you think you hit your point home with the congressmen and women there? And what do you think needs to happen in D.C.? There's so many bills, it seems like, that are being presented and so much discussion going on. Are we making headway?
Well, I think you bring up the best point, and probably what the trouble is with our cattle industry is that we can't consolidate. And I think the big four packers know this, and we've been a pretty easy group to contend with because we don't even fight with the big four packers half the time. We fight within ourselves. Our own industry mm-hmm. groups can't seem to get on the same page. And I think that was the biggest thing. Well, I've been to D.C. 15, 20 times, I don't know, and always wondered if we were ever going to move the needle. I felt more like this time there is political will to get something done if the industry could consolidate and have our same ideas, at least in framework type, and not have three different ideas being told to Senator Thune and three different ideas being told to Debbie Stabenow, the chairwoman. Then I think I really believe they want to do something, and they want to move the needle and get it swung back to the producer and to the grassroots level in the cattle industry. But we can't have them. We can't have all these different ideas out there, and then somehow they're supposed to pick one. And so we have to throw a little bit of that back on industry. We have to be ready to compromise a little bit. Understand we're probably not going to get everything and one big silver bullet and one false swoop, that we may have to get a win and maybe not get everything we want, and then we have to dig our heels in and try and do it again and again. And I think if we could ever get that foothold and finally get something that moves the needle back toward the producer, then I think we could continue to work together and get something done. So, rallying cry to, I understand the differences, and every business is independent. All these producers work independently. I joke to a lot of people, it's hard to get them to convince the sun comes up in the east and goes down the west, let alone a cattle market bill. But I believe that's what we're going to have to do if we want to get our industry back.
Justin Tupper, Vice President, U.S. Cattlemen's Association. Keep us posted.
We'll gladly do.
We don't want money going from South Dakota to other states. We're going to ask a guy named Benson next. David Benson is with us this morning with the American Cancer Society, and he's part of the South Dakotans Decide healthcare organization that is advocating for Medicaid expansion in South Dakota. David, what do we need to know, and why is it so important to your organization?
Well, I am with a coalition that is the broadest ever to launch a ballot measure campaign in the states. We represent patients, healthcare providers, farmers, business owners, educators, and health advocates working together to pass Medicaid expansion. The reason why it's so important and so urgent is that right now we have tax dollars that are leaving the state that could be better at use right here in South Dakota. Tax dollars that could provide meaningful health care coverage to working South Dakotans. We're looking at 42,500 individuals that would benefit from expansion. And it's really important that we continue to help our neighbors, family members, friends that need the type of health care coverage that allows folks to work, to be active citizens, that obviously provides access to preventive screenings that can not only save lives but make health care costs much lower.
What are we going to lose if this money suddenly flies to another state?
Well, the state's Legislative Research Council found that Medicaid expansion, as I mentioned, would cover 42,500 South Dakotans and would save the state $63 million in its first 2 years. Over 5 years, expansion would return over $1.3 billion, that's with a B, to South Dakota at a cost of only $3.8 million. So that's tax dollars that, again, we can invest right back into the state. It's a good deal, and we feel that this is going to help, like I said before, it's going to help parents, small businesses, hardworking people who have jobs that don't have health care.
This is a Farmers Union show, so for those that are tied to agriculture, speak strictly to them right now.
Well, I would point to the fact that Medicaid expansion is going to continue to ensure that we protect our rural hospitals that are are under threat. We estimate that there are 11 rural hospitals that could, are under threat of closure, and this investment that we'd be making in, back into the state is going to help rural citizens and those communities that need those local facilities in their neighborhoods to continue to serve them.
David, you're a part of the American Cancer Society representing them. Tell us about their interest in this and specifically why and how they got involved.
Yeah, and just to clarify, I'm with the American Cancer, American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. We're the advocacy affiliates of the American Cancer Society, certainly working with the American Cancer Society. We strongly advocate for Medicaid expansion. It will promote earlier cancer detection, fewer deaths, and improved outcomes for patients. We know that Medicaid expansion is associated with improved rates of colorectal, prostate, and cervical cancer screenings. Those that enroll in Medicaid prior to their cancer diagnosis have better survival rates than those who enroll after their diagnosis. And so really, as we know, if we can catch cancer early, there's a stronger likelihood of survival. It has an impact certainly in lowering healthcare costs, because if you're able to either diagnose it earlier or have those screenings to know what you are at risk of, you're not going to be dealing with those higher healthcare costs that come with a later diagnosis. We also know that closing the coverage gap, as I mentioned before, benefits states' economies. And to have a decrease in the uninsured rate has decreased hospitals' uncompensated care. Hospitals are 84% less likely to close. And those that are not part of this Medicaid expansion population, marketplace premiums. So if you're going on to the American the Affordable Care Act marketplace, those premiums are about 7% lower than states like South Dakota. So whether you would benefit directly by Medicaid expansion or indirectly, this has repercussions for all South Dakotans.
For those in South Dakota and those in neighboring states listening, how do they get involved?
Go to SouthDakotansDecide.org.
David Benson, appreciate the call. We'll keep it at the forefront.
Thank you much. Appreciate it.
All right. Is there a fair this week, guys?
Kind of a big fair, and it celebrates agriculture in the state of South Dakota.
Now, you were mentioning lunch for a quarter. I mean, I could take my whole family.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I'd take kids, grandkids, great-great-grandkids.
Well, you better line up early, because I can tell you I've served on that served that meal for, I don't know, 3-4 years. And about 10:30, they start lining up for the noon meal. So, yeah. 25 cents draws a crowd.
So, Luke, is there a big crowd?
Oh, it's a big crowd. Yeah, they'll line up a good 2 blocks deep, Bill.
Is there any meat? Is there any meat? You know, that's what they used to say about Wendy's. Where's the beef? Where's the meat? Do they have any meat?
Oh, yeah. It's a great meal. I don't know if they're barbecues or some kind of beef sandwich, but it's you won't want to miss it.
All right. So,
and you get plenty.
Anything else? You just feed them lunch and then you go home for the week? What's the deal?
Then we rope them up and put them over on the Freedom Stage.
Oh, boy. Plus, you have one of those...
the safety quiz bowl.
Yep. I'd have flunked that.
I'm a judge, so everybody wants to come now.
Hey, we got the Elvis guy coming on a little later. We're going to hear from the Ranch family, Laura Edwards as well. Stay with us. South Dakota Farmers Union Vice President Wayne Soren and Luke, is it Rindle? Rindell?
Rindle.
Anyway, it's close enough. Marketing for SDFU are in the studio today. And just before the start of the South Dakota Fair and the chance to meet a rural Dakota pride honoree later.
Bill, time to meet our South Dakota Ranch Family of the Month.
Kaylin Harris is with us, Bennett County Ranch Family. Okay, so why do you deserve to be the Ranch Family of the Month?
I have no idea.
But you have a lot of good stories. You know, when I start reading the stories that Laura wrote about you guys, the family has always kind of enjoyed the farm. You had all kinds of ideas. You had to leave your tractor parked in a certain way so it wouldn't back down the hill. How did you do all that?
Oh, I guess when we didn't really know better then, it's kind of what we had, so we got by with what we had.
You know, your mom gets quoted in the story as well, that growing up in western South Dakota, you learn to work hand in hand, deal by deal, and you really kind of earn what you get.
Yep, that's for sure.
So what else did you learn from your folks?
Oh, just how to keep on going and stick together and kind of deal with what comes at you, I guess.
Your dad always wanted your place to pretty much be a chance to do all of it together. Has it worked out that way with your tight family?
Yep, it's pretty much right where he, right what he wanted it to be. So
you raise about 400 head of cow, calf today, 2,500 acres of corn and sunflowers, wheat, millet, which I have no idea what it is. Grew up on a farm and never heard of millet. But, you know, it sounds to me like you guys do have a plan and you're trying to follow along generation to generation.
Yep, we just kind of keep our faith in God and everything always kind of seems to work out for us and just keep plugging along and we're kind of a pretty tight family, and we kind of stick together, and that's kind of what makes it all work.
Your dad, Clay, basically wanted you to leave the farm, but not leave the farm permanently, wanted you to get an education, correct?
Yep. My dad was Kyle. Clay is my brother.
Oh, well, see, you got to straighten me out. You know, the Harrises all look the same to me. I have no idea, but cattle seem to be pretty good insurance policy for your crops.
Yep, they sure are. Like right now, we're chopping 200 acres of corn and just trying to make some feed because feed this year is kind of a high-priced deal, so we figured we'd make sure we had enough. We had to hay off some crops, too, and see how it all works out at the end of the year.
I didn't see any place where it said how many generations have been on your ranch out there. What would you say?
We are the fourth.
So what about the fifth and the sixth? How are you convincing them that that's the place to be and that you can work together and be a tight family?
Yep, they're on their way up right now. We've been working cattle all weekend and damn sure can't do it without the kids.
The kids. You know, a lot of times I see the city, and the city might be Rapid City, and they decide that maybe they just don't want to fly by the seat of their pants. They want to do other things. What do you tell them?
Oh, I don't know. I think living out here is kind of the perfect place to raise kids, and they learn kind of how to work for something, and it means more to them. And I don't know what to think about living in the cities.
So what would you tell people in East River part of South Dakota about what you do, how what you do is really meant for the family?
It's not a whole lot different back there, I don't think. Just a little tougher out here, I'd say. But we don't quite get the rain and everything they do back there.
This year's crop, what would you say? Where are you at? Where are you going to go with it?
Oh, a lot of it turned into feed. Got some corn out there, but it's hard to say what it is. It's so patchy that I think a guy can still make a little money on it for what the prices are now. But everything's – we had pretty thin stands, but in the end it's probably going to work out all right because everything that's got a little thicker stand kind of burn up early.
South Dakota, as a state, getting a lot of notoriety around the country. Is it deserved about being a family place to live?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to live anywhere else.
What should I have asked you? You're West River, I'm East River, just an Iowa Hawkeye, so, you know, you got to straighten me out.
Oh, I guess I didn't know really what you're going to be asking me.
Well, then I did pretty good, because if you didn't know and I didn't know, we somehow had a conversation.
Flew by the seat of my pants here.
I think that's kind of the way your family has done it, but I'm happy to hear about what you've done, what your family has done. You said five generations?
working on the fifth.
Well,
yep.
We need the fifth and the sixth to work together if we're going to be even better. And I know that the other generations have worked to make sure that you guys could do it. Now you're working for those. I appreciate all you do. Thank you, and congratulations on being the Ranch Family of the Month.
Yep. Thank you, Bill.
Mr. Kalen Harris. Annie Steckel, are you with me this morning?
Yes, sir. Good morning. Great to hear your voice. And I always love a fellow Iowa Hawkeye.
Absolutely. But you were that East River version of...
I'm actually from Illinois and made the journey over to Iowa.
You crossed the Mississippi.
Indeed I did, but still a Midwesterner nonetheless.
Now, what these guys don't know is that you and I and our better halves actually were at a dinner one time. Do you remember that?
Yes, absolutely. We go way back, Bill, and our love and appreciation for South Dakota Farmers Union is strong. And so it's always good to reconnect. A lot's changed from several years ago, but certainly a lot of the issues we care about we're still working on.
Now tell us what a National Farmers Union biofuel specialist does.
Well, I have the pleasure of working for the National Farmers Union and really specializing in biofuels issues, which, as you know, coming from South Dakota, is such an incredibly important issue. What South Dakota Farmers Union and Doug Somke have really done to elevate this issue on a national level really just can't be understated. We've worked with different administrations and different members of Congress to try to ensure that we get the best policy out of D.C., which oftentimes is a bit of a struggle, especially working with folks that don't always see eye to eye with you. But I think that's really our challenge and our opportunity here when it comes to biofuels.
And this is Wayne Soren. Say, we had some conversations with the EPA and was kind of wondering what came of those conversations, and maybe you can tell us that and maybe address a little bit how this administration is going. Seems like they're going heavy on the EVs instead of biofuels.
Yeah, thanks so much, Wayne, and always great to talk with you. We've had a lot going on, certainly it seems like, with this administration and biofuels. Unfortunately, their efforts and affinity for kind of the electrify everything movement have continued. But we have been able to make some headway in talking about the benefits of biofuels, not only to rural America, but really just consumers everywhere, because we're, you know, cleaning up and greening the greenhouse gas reductions that people would otherwise be breathing with these air pollutants that are coming from petroleum. And so the EPA right now is working on their annual volume requirements for the RFS. They're delayed in getting these volumes out. So we've been working with the EPA and the White House and, of course, USDA, just to really talk to them about how, even though demand for a lot of things in 2020 was reduced, certainly the amount of petroleum we were using and biofuels we were using were reduced because of the pandemic, it's still incredibly important when we look at 2020 and even when we look forward to continue to have those goals of greenhouse gas reductions through higher level volumes mandated to use biofuels. It's just really, it's essential. You know, I mean, this administration has really talked about their love of addressing climate change, reducing greenhouse gas reductions. And the most immediate way to do that is through increased usage of biofuels like ethanol.
Hey, Ann, this is Luke. I know, I think it was last week, the EPA gave their recommendation to the White House on an estimated volume of ethanol that should be used, or mandated, I should say. And I was surprised to read that the 2021 volume was actually going to be lower than 2020. And obviously, like you just stated, 2020 was a pandemic year for all of us. But they did say in 2022 they're going to increase the mandated volume. So can you speak on that a little bit? I mean,
Sure, yeah. What you're talking about, the EPA has sent over a proposal to the White House. It's an introductory proposal for these volumes for the renewable fuel standards. So they're not set in stone, so we still have the ability to move the numbers, which is what we're working on right now. But what we're hearing are those rumors that you just repeated, which is the administration would be lowering the volumes in 20 and 21, which is really disappointing. At minimum, we should be at least having what is being used, what is being produced, and what is being used. But there needs to be leadership from this institution, from this administration, that if you want to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, you got to stop using so much petroleum, and you got to start using more biofuels. There needs to be that leadership coming from them, and so that's what we're talking to them about. Is it's important for them to set aggressive goals that people can work with. As you may recall, the National Farmers Union was engaged in litigation that went to the Supreme Court about how the prior administration had granted all these exemptions to these small refiners, basically saying that they didn't have to blend renewable fuels. And so that went all the way to the Supreme Court. We ultimately did not win that case, but we did get some good case law out of it. And so right now the EPA is also grappling with how they work with those exemptions, because all the refiners have applied and are continuing to apply to be granted out of the RFS program. So we really need, bottom line, the administration to step up, show leadership on this issue, and stick to what they have said, which is they support reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And the way to do that is through biofuels.
Ann Steckel, National Farmers Union Biofuels Specialist. You still got it.
Thank you. Good to talk with
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Ann.
When you get back, you're not going to believe the Rural Dakota Pride honoree that speaks to us next. All right, I got this note that I was supposed to interview a guy that is Kaz, this guy from Irwin. I thought it was Iowa, which is a small town, but it turns out it's near Desmet, Lake Preston, and the last name is Kazmazarek. Is that pretty close?
That's fairly close, but try again. Kazmazarek. Three syllables, then you can say it.
You just got the Zach at the end. Kazmazarek.
Yeah, well, it starts one way, and it ends almost the same way, just backwards, and that may sound confusing, so just call me Kaz.
Now, you were telling me that what you received was an undeserved recognition. What is that about?
Well, you know, there are so many people who do so many good things. We emphasize, seems to me, like the bad, you know, the bad. But quite honestly, I see the good, and I see a tremendous amount of people doing a whole lot of good. So I just try to do good things, that's all. And I recognize so many people far, far before me that are well-deserving of recognition. And so that's how I say it. I just undeserved, but humbled, obviously, by, you know, the thought of somebody wanting to give me an award.
I understand you can't say no to volunteering. Give us a couple of things that you have done that people would recognize, or maybe that they wouldn't recognize.
Well, I'll tell you one very obvious one. The Laura Ingalls Wilder pageant in Desmet, South Dakota. Everybody knows about Laura Ingalls Wilder pageant, and my wife and I volunteer. I am the president of the Pageant Association. I've been president for many years, and strictly a volunteer board, but we put together a pageant for three weekends in July that attract thousands of people. So, I mean, that's one thing.
When you start talking about Rural Dakota Pride, there is a lot of pride in the Midwest, but there seems to be a lot of that in South Dakota. What's the story?
I think it's our roots. You know, I think we have been brought up that way. It's a generational thing. But we talk about it, but honestly, I think we're a bit prejudiced. There's good people everywhere you go. You can leave the rural area by thousands and thousands of miles and find good people everywhere you go. So, I mean, I don't necessarily buy that idea. However, I am very proud to say that I am from the Midwest, and it almost immediately opens up a fun conversation.
One of the things that I can tell from you, Kaz, mm-hmm. and I could say Kazmer Zach, mm-hmm. but I don't want to. I figure I'd mess it up. Well, you know, and like you said, if you're going to invite me, you know, let's have some fun with it. Otherwise, just don't do it.
Yeah.
But I'm already having fun with you, and what I see you doing with other people is sharing. We got to give back. That's what we're here for.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. You know, it's not a profound thing to understand that life is short, and we don't have a lot of time to do all the things that we're capable of doing. And so get busy. Dive into things that you maybe are at first a bit uncomfortable with. But I can almost guarantee you that on the way there, you'll be chewing rocks, but on the way home, you'll be glad you did it.
Now, I understand that you are an Elvis impersonator, or that you certainly can come off as an Elvis.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, I had promised Luke that one of the things that I could get you to do was to sing a little bit of Elvis. I know this isn't the mansion in Memphis, mm-hmm. but would you mind giving us a minute 15 of an Elvis?
Well, you know, now what I might have to ask you a couple of questions. Your audience,
audience.
Are they kind of a rock and roll type, or are they kind of a sentimental love story type?
You know, the rock and roll of the Elvis era and today are far different.
Yes.
So somewhere in between is what I would tell you.
Well, then I'm going to have to do a couple of scenes, okay? Number one, scene one, I come in pretty sweaty, and I'm halfway into the performance, and I break into this. Ain't nothing but a hound dog, crying all the time. Ain't nothing but a hound dog, crying all the time. Well, you ain't never caught a rabbit, and you ain't no friend of mine. Thank you. Thank you very much.
That was good. Now, number two.
Number two. The lights go down, and I sit down on a stool, and I remove the scarf from my neck, and I sing, love me tender, love me true, tell me you are mine, I'll be yours for all the years. Till the end of time, so love me tender. And on we go. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, do you do that at the pageant?
No.
Why
oh, no.
don't you?
No,
I mean, that
no.
is amazing. You could
no,
sing to the
not
to the winner.
Material. No. No.
Or I mean, the loser.
We do fiddle stuff at the pageant.
Oh, I see.
Pa plays the fiddle, you know. No.
You do make a difference. I will tell you that.
You know, we all make a difference. In our own little subtle way, we all make a difference. I look at it this way. Driving down the road, yes, we have a bit of a history in South Dakota to do the one-finger wave, and I'm not talking about, you know, that one finger.
Yeah,
I'm
we're not finger. Number one is what you're
saying. Number one finger. That can be something that is noted as given back. It's as simple as that. And then it can go to the, you know, the far end of the spectrum where, you know, I mean, every day maybe you get up and put on a different hat and go volunteer here or volunteer there or, you know, become involved in city government or school board or county commission or even a state legislator. All those things, there's a wide variety of giving back. And I just go back to that one thing I said earlier about the short time that we're here to try to make a difference. Get busy, do it. Don't procrastinate. Don't have one of those moments in your life that you say, "Ooh, I kind of have a regret." So, get after it.
Doug Kazmerzak.
Yeah.
What a rural Dakota Pride honoree that you are. Thank you for what you do.
Well,
we should have more like you. Maybe not as many singing Elvis, because we want that to be kind of your specialty.
Yeah, well, you know what? I just want to say one thing. South Dakota Farmers Union is a wonderful organization. They do a lot of good things. I pay dues to a lot of memberships, and I'm proud of the work that South Dakota Farmers Union does, and I thank them very, very much for recognizing people who, you know, kind of have the same thoughts and and minds and get her done attitude that South Dakota Farmers Union has. So thanks for your time also.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're not as good.
I didn't want to be. You never try to show somebody up, and he was good.
Yeah, Doug is pretty good. Yep. He's a neighbor of mine, kind of.
Yeah, well, despite that, he was pretty good.
He was very good. Very good.
Now, you have other honorees that are going to be part of the fair.
Yeah, I believe we're going to give that honoree at about 10:30.
Okay.
So before you start lining up for the meal, we'll have, I believe there's six of them in there, Luke.
Six Rural Dakota Pride honorees,
so,
yes.
So that'll be before the meal, so we'll work up an appetite.
We'll try to feature a few more on the show.
There you go. I like that. Laura Edwards, South Dakota State Climatologist. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Now, we're hearing people saying we could have rain off and on again all week. Is that just because the fair is coming?
You know, I think it's going to end here before the weekend. You know, the next best chances here are, you know, Wednesday, Thursday. And then it looks ahead like a beautiful weekend, just not too hot, comfortable temperatures, and sunny skies.
So as you have looked at the numbers across the state, who got the wettest?
Oh, Sioux Falls area, south of Sioux Falls for sure, you know, with the flash flooding on Saturday night. We had some rain reports of 6 to 7 inches, maybe even a smidge more or so. Yes, I think certainly that Minnehaha, Lincoln County area was center this last week.
So weather for the Labor Day weekend would be?
You know, we're going to see more stormy activity Wednesday, Thursday, but then highs right around 80. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Lows around 60, just a little bit cooler in Huron at the fair with like mid-50s. So, you couldn't have asked for better weather to go out to the fair this year in Huron.
Laura Edwards, state climatologist. Appreciate you jumping in with us this morning.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Well, Laura gave us the update. Looks like there's some good news and some warmer news that might give you the fair and the moisture as well.
Yeah, boy, we sure look like we have a good forecast for the fair coming up. Speaking of the fair, it's going to be a real busy day on Saturday, September 4th again.
And you said lunch cost me two bits. Yeah.
Wait,
those that don't know, they don't know what a bit is.
Are we talking Bitcoin now, Bill? Or
I thought about that.
All right.
A quarter. You get lunch. But get in line at what time?
We serve at noon.
Boy.
Okay.
11:30.
They're playing the music. You know what that means.
It means we can talk for two more minutes?
No. It means I'm all shook up. Wayne Soren and Luke, what's that last name?
Rendell.
Okay. They're with the South Dakota Farmers Union. We appreciate that. I'm Bill Zortman. Thanks for being in our show today, and thanks to all the ag families across this great state. For now, our time is up. Thank you for yours.
Kello News Talk 1320 KELO Sioux Falls, FM 107.9 KELQ Flandreau Sioux Falls, and online at Kello.